Do you hear the call of them all? Paco Underhill does, and he should. As the founder and CEO of EnviroCell, he advises such clients as Blockbuster, The Gap, Walmart, Starbucks, and McDonald's on how to sell us more stuff. Underhill's the author of the acclaimed bestseller, Why We Buy, The Science of Shopping. His new book is simply and aptly called The Call of the Mall. So who's calling the shots when you go shopping?
Two-thirds of what we buy, whether we're walking into the grocery store, the local Target, or whether we're looking at walking into the local shopping mall, we had no intention of buying walking in the door.
Two-thirds?
Two-thirds. If I interview somebody walking into a grocery store and then interview them walking out, two-thirds of what they've purchased, they had no intention of buying walking in the door.
Which means if I go into a big shopping mall intending to buy a pair of socks, I'm likely to come out with three things that I had no clue about?
One of the issues that the 21st century merchant is doing is trying to tickle us to think that we need something or that we remember that we need something, and more critically, that we remember that we need something and we'd like to acquire it right then and there. But to be fair, our consumer economy would collapse if the only thing we bought is what we needed. You and I, Jim, could live the rest of our lives on fruit, vegetables, pasta, wine, olive oil, good reading, and yearly doses of socks and underwear, and maybe batteries for our radio. Everything else is discretionary. And that one of the issues that we face as a consumer culture is that we have gone from what was a 20th century war where, you know, whether it was Pepsi against Coke or Macy's against Bloomingdale's or Burger King against McDonald's, to what is, in a way, a 21st century bar fight where everybody is competing with everybody else for the customer's discretionary expenditure. That if I think of somebody walking down the concourse of Mall of America as $100 to be spent, it's $100 that could be spent on a sweater, could be spent on lingerie, could be spent at the food court, could go to the movies, or it could be spent on, you know, flowers and books.
But your business, then, is going to each of these merchants and advising them on how to make sure that $100 is spent on them, right?
We are a testing agency for prototype stores and prototype sections. We function in 27 countries across the world, and we do work with merchants to help them eliminate all the ways in which they shoot themselves in the foot as it relates to their customers.
Well, give me an example. What, for instance, would you do when you are hired by a merchant to go in and examine how sales might be increased?
Let's take an example in a shopping mall, okay? In most settings, the dominant traffic pattern comes from the right, because we tend to walk in a shopping mall the same way that we drive. So often by simply shifting the design of windows, maybe even it's moving existing fixtures for a right-hand bias, we can increase the distance at which somebody sees the store. We can turn the displays in the window to slightly angle towards the customer approaching from that direction and change the traffic patterns of people entering the store off of the mall concourse. That's step one.
Okay.
And that's reasonably easy. The second thing that we will look at is what is the circulation pattern through the store? With 90% of the world right-handed, it is in the merchant's interest to establish a counterclockwise circulation pattern because it puts the strongest dominant right hand closest to the product.
Okay. So you don't want to have people immediately turn to the left when they go into a store.
Part of what we want is to set up a circulation pattern that is friendly to both the merchant as well as the customer. The third piece is we'll stand at the doorway and we'll go, are you giving the customer a reason to go deep into the store? We think of the visuals as we move into a mall store, it's a little like a Buddhist temple, that in the back of the temple, we want some form of mandala, something that I see from the doorway that tickles my interest and makes me recognize that I'd like to go back there and take a look.
But doesn't that send you past the stuff that's right there in the front? I always thought that, you know, the first thing you see is the thing you want to buy.
Some of it is recognizing that what I put up front is something that I need to make a purchase decision on reasonably quickly, because I will be brushed from other people walking in the door, whereas something that is in the back of the store is something that takes a little more decision as to, you know, whether I buy this or not.
And if you're brushed by somebody else coming in the store, you are less likely to buy? You get irritated?
You are a victim of butt brush factor, which is the simple premise that we are a posteriorly sensitive species, and the more likely we are to be brushed from the rear, the less likely we are to convert from a browser to a buyer.
I remember reading about this in your book. That's not something that just happens at the entrance to the store, is it? You have to think about the butt brush factor everywhere in the store.
That's right. One of the other pieces that the Call of the Mall talks about is the need for interior parking within the structure of a shopping mall. The way I impact the quality of the experience of the primary shopper is to take care of her accessories, which may be her children or her husband. That if you give her a place to park her husband, whether it's in long-term parking where she can leave him for 20 minutes, whether it's medium-term parking, which might be right outside the door for 10 minutes, or whether it's short-term parking outside the dressing room, those are all places that encourage her to focus on what she'd like to do, which is to shop.
Well, let's talk a little bit about malls as opposed to other kinds of shopping. Are malls special places? I mean, there are a lot of complaints over the years that malls have destroyed downtowns, for instance, and that the mom-and-pop stores are all gone now because the malls came in. Do you think that's true, by the way?
I think malls played a very powerful role in the evolution of small towns and suburbs across America. Let's remember that retail follows housing, and that part of what gave birth to the shopping mall boom is the boom in suburbs. And that for most of us who were over age 45, we recognized that the mall is a bogus place, that it is the attempt to duplicate some form of urban experience.
We may think that, but not on a very conscious level, do you think?
I think one of the things that is interesting for us is looking at the difference in attitude, for example, between the 50-year-old man and the 25-year-old man towards the shopping mall.
For instance?
The 25-year-old man, that shopping mall is a very special place. It's one of the first places that he was ever able to function as an individual. It was one of the places where his mother, sometime at age 11 or 12, felt comfortable dropping him off and having him spend 2 or 3 hours in the presence of people of many generations, in the presence of many strangers, where his start at some form of socialization started. That is one of the reasons why I think a younger generation of male animals is eminently more comfortable with the shopping bug than the older generation of shopping males.
This is the season of the year when people are heading for the malls and the downtowns and the strip malls, and everybody wants to buy things. They don't know what they want to buy. Do you have any advice for people to hit the stores and come out with things that will satisfy them as opposed to things they didn't expect to buy?
I think one of the things about a gifting season is to walk into the season recognizing that what you're interested in is the icons of your relationship to somebody else, and that being imaginative and thoughtful has ultimately a lot more meaning than giving people things that cost lots of money.
But when you see someone head into a store and you can see them heading for the rack that you know the merchant wants to send them to, but that isn't likely to give them great satisfaction. I mean, is there general advice you can give us to be aware of how we're being directed?
I think one of the things that is the difference between an amateur and a professional shopper is that an amateur shopper gets their joy out of the act of buying, whereas a professional shopper gets their joy out of ownership. And one of the things that we need to do is to recognize that I need to do a better job of dividing that product into my life and asking myself the very honest question, do I think I will use it? The other practice which I try to use in my own life is that I made the decision, I don't know, 10 years ago, that I, for the rest of my life, will own 40,000 possessions, and that when I bring something in the front door, I have the responsibility of taking something out the back door.
At the mall, at the mall.
Paco Underhill is the author of the book, The Call of the Mall.